Shalom, Saints. Welcome back to another episode of After Hours. Much obliged for you joining me once again. If you've not already, check out the latest interview on the main YouTube channel with young Jacob, a teenage insight into a life in Torah. You know, a bit of shameless self-promotion with that one, but I just thought it was an amazing amazing interview, a brilliant guest, and yeah, if you've not checked out already, I encourage you to go do so. I've often stated also on the show that for different reasons, don't really tend to get into eschatological elements of the faith on here. Not because I don't have a belief or a point of view. It more to do with the fact that there's so much being said out there at the moment that there's plenty for you to get to grips with that subject. But with that being said, I thoroughly recommend at the time of recording, I believe the next Torah portion coming up, Shimini, with Joe, he really gets to grips with current events in terms of prophecy, the red heifers, what's taking place in Israel with the potential new temple, all of that stuff. So obviously we're instructed not to be ignorant in these days. So it's far from me to be ignorant in such a massive area. I just think that was really well dealt with and walked through in the last Torah portion. So yeah, go and check it out. I really encourage you to do so with that one. But with that being said, to today's episode, let's take a look. Now, my first outing, very short, very sweet. This is courtesy of our very own Jackie Brennan. He sent me this one the other day, and I just thought, wow, this is definitely one for the pod. But it's hard to do an episode without mentioning AI at this point. But here we are again. This is an AI-generated rendition of Drugs as Demons, which I think is a very interesting proposal in terms of the personification of substances, particularly as many advocates for stimulated experiences, shall we say, particularly of the more hallucinogenic variety, will quite often cite interactions with entities and beings, and quite often in culture and in general reference to drugs, there's a very well-crafted description of the personification of substances, and with the introduction of AI art, love it or hate it, I just thought this was absolutely spot on. So let's take a look.
Yo ho, all hands, hoist the colors high, heave ho, thieves and beggars, never shall we die.
Now some have died and some are alive, and others sail on the sea.
Yo.
So aside from a creative perspective in terms of the intricacy and the detail of the art itself being like really, really high quality, bearing in mind the first forays into AI generated art not that long ago as well, to come to this point is pretty mad. But some of these, like I always used to, again, this is all, you know, in reference to a background that I had in my past with regards to the use of substances, and I'm sure many can attest of a similar thing, but I always used to refer to cocaine as a vampire. It's a absolute Dracula of a drug, in terms of it will just bleed, it will just suck the life out of anything it comes into contact with. And to see it personified in this way is it's just a very stark illustration of what we're dealing with in terms of what's taking place beyond the veil. Now, I'm not saying or suggesting that these are, you know, accurate, but it does beg the question of when people are wrestling with their demons, as it were, you know, are these substances in league and collusion with direct principalities, or is it more of a perhaps a parasitic entity that's associated? You know, it's interesting. There's a lot of musicians and creative types who literally personify a time or a season, particularly under the influence of a drug, in terms of an alter ego or characteristic. If you, again, this is for the older heads. If you go back to David Bowie, and he would talk about being this the character of the Thin White Duke. Latterly, Eminem being the Slim Shady, this white kind of, just this evocative of a character that's associated with drugs is quite a fascinating concept. Cannabis, like, look at this, like the Dr. Seuss style, like, features. And the thing is, like, a lot of these substances are always, not always, but quite often it's done in a place of seeking comfort, refuge. And then latterly it develops into habitual situations and dependencies. I just can't believe how spot on these are. Meth, ice, fentanyl. For those who aren't familiar, fentanyl is like endemic across America at the moment. And I believe it's, if not already taking root in the UK, it's definitely well on its way. Evil stuff, originally intended for use of those who are terminally ill, and now it's being substituted as for heroin, codeine. But anyway, thanks, Jack, for that. A nice interesting way of getting into our first subject for today. Now, for today's show, it's one subject, and for the sake of a disclaimer, I guess, because this could potentially be, I don't know, maybe somewhat of a controversial subject, which really, if you find it controversial, it's offensive, then I'm glad. I'm happy to do that. However, as a disclaimer, yet again, this is my opinion or my foray into a subject that isn't necessarily representative of the fellowship or individuals within the fellowship. I couldn't say if it was specifically, I couldn't tell you what the position was. I could guess. I could definitely take a guess in terms of the position on this subject. But for me personally, this is a foray into some of my thoughts and feelings about a potential this subject today. Again, it's very vast. It's very big. It's very nuanced, and it would take a very long time to go into fully. But I think just for the sake of touching on something that came my way recently, I thought it'd be remiss not to have a little chat about it. Because although this is a topic that does come up within the Bible at certain points, particularly in certain Torah portions, for me, it may not necessarily be something that's taught on massively. It's certainly known of and discussed. And who knows, that there probably are Torah portions that have been recorded in the past with reference to this. But I thought, as a subject, it's a continual thing that pops up, particularly within the Hebrew roots movement, as it were. And so I thought it'd be good just to take a look and share some thoughts and opinions on it. So let's take a look at the world of polygamy. Now, this came away through the YouTube channel of a guy called Peter Santanello. If you're not familiar, he's a secular journalist who tends to spend time with fringe communities, religions, all sorts of people. He's kind of like a Louis Theroux, but maybe not quite as naively manipulative. He's a bit more kind of straight up with what he does. And, you know, he's done some good bits where he spent time with the Hasidic community, with Mormons. And yeah, so this outing, he's chatting to some guys in the US about polygamy or plural marriages. Now, just before we get into this, just to, I want to kind of like differentiate between polygamy in general, in terms of what consenting adults who choose to do and choose to live their lives according to the way that they see fit, and those within a kind of biblical framework who are perhaps using the scriptures or using a biblical framework in order to justify this way of living. So I'm not here to condemn those who choose to live a certain way. I mean, you know, there's autonomy, and people in the world are held to a different standard, although it's not something I would encourage or condone. This is more about the potential use of it in a biblical context, particularly in a community or with a group of people to live this way. So this is an insight in terms of some folks that have experienced this, and I think he gets quite a good take on it. So we'll skip through and have a skim. I would recommend watching the whole documentary. I say documentary, it's only an hour long, and he has some really good insights and some great conversations with some really open and honest people about it. And let's have a look at the intro and go from there.
Today we have almost impossible access to get, but we got it.
I've been in two plural families myself, so I could say I'm a polygamous wife.
This isn't for everybody.
BMW stands for Big Mormon Wagon.
And we had one.
You'd be open to a plural marriage, and you're 85.
I want to build a bridge so that people won't be afraid of us.
You think it's like a natural human thing?
I do.
That is the all-seeing eye of God.
What if a gay couple tried to come into your church?
You're a plural marriage twin.
Okay.
Oh, okay, okay,
so,
okay.
Warren I would Jeffs, say Warren could. Jeffs is horrible.
It's like a rival Washington, D.C. They have their own currency, have their own language.
Own language?
The Deseret Alphabet.
Can you leave at any time if you want?
There's 22 of us total, myself included.
We might be different, come from different walks of life, believe different things, but we're all people.
Good morning, guys. Today we have a very interesting video. Am I in this or no?
You're all in.
All in.
One more time. 1, 2, 3.
Awesome.
Cool.
How many different fundamentalist groups?
I think at least
200.
Yeah, oh, wow. They gave us.
You don't want to be on camera.
So just off the bat, he's dealing predominantly with the Latter-day Saints Mormon organization, and within that there are like literally hundreds of splits of denominations and different sects within Mormonism and the LDS movement, and he's talking to some of a certain branch.
Oh yeah, I do.
Okay, cool.
I don't want to do it in front of the LDS representatives here. I want to be respectful.
Okay, gotcha.
To them, so.
There's a big difference between you, or what? What is that?
Yes, we believe in the fundamental principles that Joseph Smith and Brigham Young taught.
Okay.
And they've taken those away.
And for those that don't know, Joseph Smith was basically a Freemason. The whole thing is basically a Freemasonic structure, and there are hints within the within this presentation about that. But anyway.
taken celestial plural marriage away because of all the opposition from the government, United States government.
When did they take that away?
1890 was the manifesto.
Oh, a long time ago.
Yeah. They've actually persecuted a lot of the people that believe in celestial plural marriage. Tried to rip families apart.
Why do you call it celestial?
There are different ordinances and things that you comply with in order to make it so there's more harmony in the home. I've been in two plural families myself.
Okay.
So I could say I'm a polygamous wife.
So you had a sister wife?
Oh, many sister wives.
Many?
Yes.
How many?
Annette's actually one of my sister wives.
Who's Annette?
Care.
Okay.
Yeah.
On the left?
Our husband passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
In 2015. With her family, I had her and one other person. And then in the previous family, there was five of us. Both of the husbands had health issues. So.
Okay. So walk us through someone that doesn't know that world at all. Is it super challenging, or what's it like having multiple sister wives and one man?
There's challenges.
Okay.
But you learn to rise above those and to love each other and to care for each other and for each other's children. It's just a different attitude and perspective is what I say. You have to take on, you have to get over your fears and jealousies.
Okay. Can you leave at any time if you want, or no?
You can if you want. There's free agency. Free agency. Highly honored.
In your fundamentalist sect, not in all of them, right? Some of them, like Warren Jeffs.
I would say Warren Jeffs is horrible.
That's known as FLDS.
Yeah, there's a lot.
So Warren Jeffs is a well-publicized FLDS, I believe, a fundamentalist Latter-day Saint who was caught. I think he had up to like 70 wives and numerous times of abuse of minors and adults, and just a terrible situation. We'll keep going.
A lot of mind control in that, and we don't believe in mind control. We believe in free agency. We are encouraged to keep our covenants and try to work through our differences, of course. But nobody is going to be hunted down and killed like, you know, you've heard of the LeBaron. Some of the LeBaron groups have actually killed their members if they left, and we do not believe in that at all.
Okay.
We believe that our husbands are supposed to be called on missions and do the Lord's work, and so they're not always around, and so it's nice to have that close-knit companionship with other women. A woman relates to another woman a lot better sometimes, and to help be supportive to each other and help each other's children.
So just touching on this notion here about this element of sisterhood, and it's a theme where, again, I would advocate anyone watching to look into this for themselves and make their own mind up. But from what I've seen, one of the most prevalent characteristics of one of the draws towards this lifestyle from a female perspective is this element of sisterhood and this kind of co-opted existence of raising children and having this support network of sisters being able to raise children. So their intention is raising children in the best possible way with the best support network possible, which is an intrinsically good thing. And what I would advocate is, within a healthy church structure, a fellowship, group, community, is that you're going to have that in place in terms of being able to share the burden of what it means to raise and teach children in the way, and to not feel like you're doing it alone, to have a shared experience, and to know that you have reliable people around you to help and support you, whether it be physically, emotionally, or spiritually. And that's in a healthy environment. So I think that's one of the main draws from what I see at this pattern of wanting to be in and around other sisters who are like-minded, trying to do the same thing, which is a good thing, you know?
So
How many children did you have in your family then?
Okay, so in my previous family, I had two boys from my previous marriage and two daughters in that marriage. So I had four. My other sister wife had six. The other sister wife had five. And then our husband actually had a first wife that chose not to be a part of it.
Okay.
She had seven children. So we had those children too. So wow. I would have to add a lot, but quite a few children.
Did you forget names?
No.
Never?
No.
Are you like under one roof, one house?
There was times we were, and there was times we had our own separate abodes, just depending upon the circumstances and
okay.
what was happening. And as the family grew, it kind of was better to have our own abodes, but to still come together. We always came together for many functions.
And now you're not in a plural relationship?
I'm not right okay. now. I would like to become in that again, but my current husband is kind of not sure if he's ready for that.
Okay, yeah.
He's a little scared. See, I'm the eager one and he's scared.
See, I would have thought it was the opposite. I would have thought it was the men pushing this. And
Not always. With my mother and my father, it was my mom pushing it. My dad was the one that was holding back.
Interesting.
Quite often, from what I've seen also, a lot of the, and not just within Mormon situations, a lot of these guys are products of polygamist family setups themselves. So they've almost been born into it and are used to this situation, which obviously from a traditional standpoint, it seems quite a very foreign concept and a very alien concept, irrespective of biblical view. So, but I always tend to bear that in mind with a lot of these women who are, they talk about free agency, they talk about, them quite often being the driving force behind that. But for me, that's part of the recruitment drive, you know, quite often in from what I've seen in modern examples, it very seldom is it the man who's searching or bringing on more wives on board. It would actually be the wives doing the recruitment, as it were, under this guise of, come join the sister, you know. So, and I think, but at the core of that, quite often with these, particularly in the LDS situation, there will be like a structural hierarchical center point to that, whether it's arranging marriages, whether it's those facilitating and encouraging it, quite often comes from maybe a slightly more suspicious source. Now, just to point out, why am I using these guys as an example of it? Obviously, this is only one element of those that advocate for plural marriages. The reason I use this as an example is because the fringe nature of these communities are very often, and again, I'm not saying that those who are in the Messianic faith are the same as, I'm not saying that, but in fringe communities that basically use a lot of language like covenants and keeping the law of God, you know, a lot of them will say that they're trying to live the way that was cited in the Old Testament, and that, it advocates for this lifestyle within the Bible, right? Because that's where it starts, where the muddy waters start to get more muddy, basically, is that this is an organization, albeit a splintered one, that will advocate a biblical backdrop and justification for plural marriages. And I don't believe, in my experience of within the Hebrew Roots Torah movement, as if you can call it that, there are those that would do the same and will look to the Old Testament and will look to the Bible to justify and explain the reasons as to why they pursue this choice. So that's why I'm using these guys, not saying that we're like the Mormons, but that was just my thoughts. Because quite often, you know, you can watch things about stuff that goes wrong within well-intentioned communities that, you know, they actually, you know, they keep the Sabbath and they don't do the feast of of the world, and they talk about you know, living closer to the Bible, and these are all things that as Messianic believers we advocate for in the same time. But I think partly as a warning, but also as an apologetic for ourselves, that we're not all like cut from the same cloth when we start talking about wanting to live in the way that the Bible cites, because quite often the perception is that this is what we're like, this is what we're suggesting. Oh, you want to do the Old Testament, you want to have loads of wives and da, da, da. And it's like, no, we need to distinguish and say, like, I don't think that this is either right or actually prescribed in the scriptures. Anyway.
Yes. Wow. Because he realized the responsibility and was like, can I make sure everybody's happy? And
the financial responsibility is massive.
That's very massive. So most of the time we're all of us are going to work, or there's certain wives that will go to work and others will take care of their kids and help teach them, and, you know, or they'll take turns. So there's not every family is the same.
Do you think plural marriage is a natural thing because it comes from your God, your scripture, let's say?
Well, the way we look at it is, if there's a really good man that's righteous and that wants to be honorable to his women and to the children, he should have that opportunity to be the father of as many children as possible. We believe that we...
So this is actually a deep point. I think in general, there's a lot of elements to this. So in a world that's fallen, and there may not be as many counted as righteous in a modern context, a guy who's considered righteous and could be an attractive proposition for women in a world where there may not be very many good men. You've also got an element of kind of like, it's hard to touch on this without getting into the wider perspective, but this element of like the strongest man. So those who are, you know, the best hunters, the most virile, you know, the strongest king will tend to dominate like an area or like a gene pool because of their dominance in terms of how successful they are within a community context, can also be a reason to advocate for this lifestyle. Now, this is where an element where it can get twisted from a biblical perspective, in the sense that, you know, it would advocate that in the Old Testament that many of the forefathers were polygamists themselves and took more than one wife. Which is true. However, I put this in the category of divorce. You know, it says, you know, why did Moses prescribe? Why was divorce permitted or prescribed for Israel? It was made permissible because of a fallen situation. It wasn't necessarily God's intended divine design. It was actually a violation of that. And so therefore they had to put in a structure which then made it something that could possibly be workable within that environment. So again, this element of, you know, a righteous man being father to many, you know, this is what was done in the Old Testament. This is what was, you know, this is what was God-given and God-ordained. Now, unfortunately, that's not necessarily the case. Now, this is where it's even slightly more nuanced, where people will say within the Torah, it's not directly outlawed within the Torah. It's not a violation of the Torah. You know, David did it, Solomon did it, all of these individuals did it. But it doesn't say not to do it. It actually gives stipulations as to what to do when you do it. And again, part of the difficulty is that when we're advocating for the Torah, for what Moses prescribes and does, it can then be difficult to navigate, you know, quite how many laws we are to do and what is applicable for us. You know, some are women, some are Levites, some are farmers, some are, you know, but unfortunately, there are those, and I know this to be a fact, within, you know, this area of the faith, where they'll start citing this situation as a means to justify polygamy. And just to, I guess while we're there, when we're talking about these individuals in the Bible that indulged in this, just got to ask yourself, how did they get on? How did they get on? How did it work out for them? You know, as Paul says, some things may be permissible, but it may not be profitable. And I would put this top of the list. This may well be permissible in certain situations, and God actually describes what it means to apply this in certain situations, whether it's, you know, your brother's wife, et cetera, et cetera. There's so much on that. However, it doesn't mean to say that we should just go ahead and do it. And this is part of my heart of why I'm touching on this in this area, is because I believe there are a lot of people within, particularly women, who are in this area of the faith, who may be vulnerable for different reasons to the guise and persuasions of men, particularly ones that are charismatic, those who are organized or leading certain situations, who are able to go on a recruitment drive and to prey on women who are desiring good things and are actually falling foul of really wonky stuff. Really, really bad misuse of the Bible. Why do I have a problem with this? I don't have a problem with individuals. It's not personal. I just see this as antithetical to the gospel. How many brides is Yeshua coming back for? What did Yeshua say in terms of what it means to leave your mother and your father, to cleave to your spouse, to be of one flesh? So many scriptures. This isn't about going through, you know, verse by verse, line by line. Again, there is. I'd be happy to do that, but really, when you know the picture of Israel, the bride, the full redemptive story of the adultery of Israel, and then the coming back, and you know, it's one bride, it's a bride. And that's part of the reason why I like I said, if you're in the world or you want to, that's whatever. But if you're using, if you're coming into a biblical context and justifying it, then personally, I'd have a problem with that. Anyway, I apologize. That was a bit of a rant. But it's just how I feel about it. And I see a lot of vulnerable people on here and a lot of well-meaning people who have been taken advantage of.
When we come down here, we are to provide physical bodies for our spirit brothers and sisters.
Okay.
And we want them to have the greatest opportunity to be raised in a righteous family, instead of, like a lot of people out in the world, you know, the woman has the children, but the man is off doing his own thing and not being honorable to her. So
what do you mean, like cheating on the wife?
Cheating on the wife, or drinking, or, you know, just doing things that it's not trying to be uplifting and help be a righteous priesthood. There's a lot of really good men out there that are honorable to their wives and good like that. But we just feel like if there is someone honorable and trying to uphold their priesthood callings, they should be given that opportunity. So okay. We don't believe celestial plural marriage is for everyone. It's for only those that really want to.
So there's not a pressure in your religion?
Yeah, we have a lot of people that
you don't have to be.
No.
Okay. The name of your religion, your church, I'm sorry.
The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the Righteous Branch.
The Righteous Branch, okay.
Yes.
So that's obviously not FLDS, but you're fundamentalists.
Yes.
It's a bit confusing, right?
There's a lot of different groups. You're going to hear of the AUB and the FLDS and the Short Creek group, and you're going to hear a lot of different groups.
Okay. Do you all get along, or you stay to yourselves? Or
We have interacted some.
I think I'll end this this bit, but I do recommend checking this out. He speaks to a few different people with their different experiences of it, and you know, they're all you know, they're good folk and they're doing their best with what they have and making their own decisions and choices. Now, here is another example. And again, I'm citing perhaps slightly more extreme situations. I'm sure there are those that live this lifestyle and do it in a way that isn't necessarily abusive or, you know, living badly as such. But I just think there's an overall tone of it that I don't really like at all. And maybe some of these extreme examples kind of paint the picture of the tail end of what can happen if it goes wrong. Because again, I want to kind of state a case that there's a lot of things that can go in well-intentioned and it starts to unravel because it's not actually a viable, fulfilling way of living biblically. It may be carnally, it may be in a secular situation, but if you're really going to be looking at the spiritual fulfillment of what the Bible says in terms of what a marriage means, what it represents and how you are to fulfill that, you're going to be in trouble. It's going to unravel. So I'm not saying that these extreme situations are right. Children are going to be abused and da-da-da-da-da. No, but again, it's just the pitfall. So this is another guy called Sam Bateman. Again, he's another splinter offshoot of LDS. And just watch the clip.
Your names and stuff.
No, ma'am. No. You're not going to decide the outcome of this. We will decide and we'll let you know how everything's going to happen here, okay?
Shocking body camera video shows the arrest of self-proclaimed prophet and fundamentalist church leader Samuel Bateman after investigators found him illegally transporting underage girls in a trailer.
How old are you?
14.
How old are you? 11? How old are you? 12? How old are you? How old are you?
It happened on August 28th in Flagstaff, Arizona. Authorities pulled over Bateman after receiving multiple concerned calls about his trailer.
Why children are being transported in a vehicle. We're getting calls about hands sticking out of a vehicle, out of the trailer. So that is why we're contacting you guys, because it is unsafe for children to be riding in a trailer.
Inside the trailer, investigators found three girls, ages 11 to 14, hiding. The trailer had makeshift seats and a porta potty inside. Federal court documents say Bateman is a leader in the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ of the Latter-day Saints, or FLDS. The church, known for practicing polygamy, is an offshoot of the modern Latter-day Saints Church. Local news stations report Bateman has dozens of followers and more than 20 wives, who he is accused of sexually abusing and trafficking across state lines.
At this point, he's detained right now. I don't know. Okay, I understand that, but like he said, once we do our investigation, we can figure this out. But
body camera video shows FLDS women voicing concern for Bateman, demanding he be released.
Your names and stuff.
No, ma'am.
No.
You're not going to decide the outcome of this. We will decide and we'll let you know how everything's going to happen here, okay?
The women can also be heard saying they fear law enforcement, referencing the 2008 raid of Warren Jeffs' fundamentalist sect in Texas.
Okay. Well, and what city or state was that in?
It was in Texas. But it
okay.
Was
well, you're in Flagstaff, Arizona right now. What we will treat you, we're just trying to, we are just trying to figure this out right now.
Bateman was charged with three counts of child abuse and is being held in Florence, Arizona. Three adult women, believed to be some of Bateman's wives, are also charged with kidnapping and obstruction of justice.
So, yeah, in a nutshell, I'm all up for the practicing of religious freedoms. Evidently, it's going to be dictated to by whatever country or state that you're in, because certain states and countries will dictate as to whether you can or can't be in a polygamous marriage or be recognized as such, because it is still, generally considered illegal in a lot of places. However, at the expense of women and children, that's where you obviously have to draw the line and say, no, this, you know, that in the some of the extreme cases that and there is trafficking taking place, there is abuse of children taking place and so forth. So as I mentioned, that's some of the more extreme examples. But just to touch on some of perhaps the more, emotional and how can I say, like, if done in a context that isn't extreme, it can still be so less than beneficial to those that do it. Just an article here about the impact on the mental health of those that women who are in polygamous situations. While some studies suggest different mental health outcomes among women in polyagamous versus monogamous marriages, no published systematic review or meta-analysis has analysed the relevant research literature. I mean, I guess any degree of research or data that's presented is always going to be subject to as good as the testing and as vigorous the data is. So you can't say it's ever definitive, but you can still get a bit of a window into these things. Where are we? So the meta-analysis indicates that women in polygamous marriage had worsened mental health as compared to women in monogamous marriages. The weighted mean differences with 95% confidence intervals were, I'm not even going to try and say all that stuff, a higher self-esteem and life satisfaction among women in polygamous marriages, and statistically superior family functioning among women in monogamous marriages were also found. So you can generally advocate that there is ill effect. Now, just from an anecdotal point of view, I don't believe that it's possible to have all of the needs met, particularly from the female perspective, when in a polygamous situation. And what I mean by that is that the time, emotion, attention, support, finance, etc. I don't know if it's actually possible for a man to provide that en masse. If you flip it on the other side, actually, not even flipping it on the other side, just all round, like, those that are in marriages will say that it's hard work and there's a lot in it already without doing it on multiple levels. And a lot of these women, particularly in these situations, they're left wanting, you know, and they'll talk about dealing with jealousies and sanctification and not being selfish and allocating time and the situation with raising children, how it benefits everyone. But really, 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 you know, we serve a jealous God and he's not into sharing, like, his bride. And that should be the application all round. And a lot of women in these situations, they'll describe about how, you know, they're not fulfilled. Like, they don't have the attention and the fulfillment that they actually desire. I was saying to Tommy as well, as I wouldn't say researching it, because it's too big a subject, but I came across one video and I was going through some of the comments, and this comment was absolutely classic, which I thought this could probably just hang the whole podcast on and I could go home. But the video was, "Why did God allow polygamy in the Bible?" And it was a cool little video. But the first comment I saw is, "Why would a man want more than one mother-in-law?" Which is, I thought that's great. Anyway, back to the emotional element. Now, I came across this. I think there was like a reality show about a polygamous situation. And again, this was just an insight into how these things can unravel. The title of this video, Cody doesn't want to advocate for polygamy anymore. So this guy, Cody, he looks like he's got at least four wives here. And they're just having a little round table moment. And I just thought this was quite insightful.
So I've been thinking, how do I start this? Because I need to communicate where I'm coming from. And I guess I want to say is, why did you enter the principal?
Whoa. I wonder where she's going with this.
The principal for us is the real term for plural marriage. It's the principle of plural marriage. I mean, it's really a gospel principle for us. So in our community, it's shortened to the principle.
No, I am surprised. I did not know what her questions would be. Wow, okay.
I mean, I did it because I love the whole idea of the whole family and this whole group synergy. And I really felt like we would get progression, right? The whole idea is that we overcome our crap.
Yeah. The whole purpose, we truly believe, of living plural marriage is that you have to learn how to not be selfish.
I mean, I don't know. I guess for me, it was just like being raised in it.
My dad took his first plural wife when I was like 11 years old. I had a lot of years with other moms and other siblings that weren't just from my mom. So it wasn't out of the ordinary for me.
I like the example that my grandmas were, for sure.
And just while I remember this point, when I was talking about fulfillment and gratification, I truly believe that a man's emotional needs and sustainment will come from one woman. And if a man is driving a, and some might not like this statement, but I'm not really bothered. If a man is advocating for this, I'm telling you it's from the flesh. This is a carnal situation. Now, are people, do they have the potential to be able to have multiple partners and all of that stuff from a physical perspective? Clearly, things would suggest in this fallen state, yes. However, because of those, because of the biblical citations of what marriage actually is, how it is to be walked out and what it represents, any man who's advocating or trying to pursue this, it's coming from a physical perspective. He's not looking for more emotional support, great ideas, or he's looking for something, and we know what we're talking about. He's looking for something that's carnal, physical. That's it. Anybody suggesting otherwise, I will say, is a liar. They're lying. It's that, and some may not like that. They might justify it and say, no, well, you know, he's providing, he's giving life to children. And nah, he's trying to get more of that. That's it. That's it. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But that's where I'm.
They were just really close. And after my grandpa died, they just stayed together. So I like the sisterhood.
To me, that's what family was a lot of grandmas. And then I had two moms, and so that's what a normal family was to me, was a lot of moms.
The big family thing was always really cool to me. I loved when I first met you guys, how you guys functioned. I loved it. Hmm. You know, when I saw you guys at the house in Lehigh.
We seemed so functional.
Boy, we pulled the wool over your eyes.
Oh my gosh.
It's sad. It's really sad. Like, these are all, you know, family functioning and being in a big family. Like, these are all incredible things, like, truly. And the what seems to be the latest wife in that situation saw that, and that was appealing. Like, I get it.
Gosh, wow. I never said that. I still think that still exists.
You know, I've thought about this a lot lately because I've told friends recently that I didn't want to be an advocate of plural marriage anymore because I am more aware now than I ever was before the apparent and obvious unfairness in the relationship.
Some are up, some are down, but it's, you know, it's always changing.
I know. I have all the love I want And you guys sometimes feel like you're pining constantly for me to, you know, give you some.
That's the rub. That's where the rubber meets the road for me. It's not possible. It's not possible to give sufficient time, attention, love, care, all of these like essential attributes and qualities to what it means to be in a covenant, a fruitful covenant, you know. And again, just because things have been allowed or been permissible in the past doesn't necessarily mean it's God's intended design. And I just thought this guy's admittance here is just a really, yeah, it says a lot.
I mean, the other day I was having dinner with Logan and I was like going, I have really messed this up. We came into this by way of commandment. We felt like we were supposed to live it and we had an ideal that it was a better way. And it come to a stark reality of the struggle that it is.
I think for this subject, again, it can be something that can be discussed more, and there's a lot to it. But obviously, I need to condense and try and pack in as much as I can. But essentially, for me, what I'm trying to do is show my heart in terms of a warning and a protection to those in this branch of the faith. If you ever are to come across this so-called biblical notion of plural marriages, just be careful. I've seen direct results. I've seen indirect things take place, and I just plain don't like it. And like I said, a lot of us on this walk can maybe find ourselves in this position of, you know, being strong in the faith and walking in the Torah and the commandments. But really, there's a lot of vulnerable folks out there. There's a lot of people who need love and are searching for their spouse and will compromise on certain values and positions and beliefs in order to facilitate a situation that means that they could be loved and cared for. So that's basically why I thought it'd be good just to touch on this. Now, I'm not saying that this is a thing that's massively prevalent. Is it discussed within Christianity in general? Yes. Is it discussed within more splintered elements of the faith? Most definitely. And I know for a fact that if I was of the volition of having more malevolent intentions towards more vulnerable people, I would gravitate towards fringe religious communities. So that's, you know, I say this as a warning that there are people out there who try to facilitate and to gratify their pleasures, their desires. As dark as that sounds, it's true and it happens, and we can't say that we're not infallible to being infiltrated by those of that nature. So again, just my thoughts, just my feelings about the situation and the subject. As ever, if there's anything that you disagree with, anything that I've touched on that you feel like is incorrect, you know, am I way off the mark? Am I wide off the target? Do you believe that this is a thing that's applicable and is for us for today? Or is it, as I've mentioned there, something that we just don't do and needs to be left back in the annals of history rather than revived in a kind of pseudo biblical justification? Yeah, so that's my take on polygamy. As ever, like, subscribe, comment, do all the stuff. But again, I thank you for joining me. It's been a pleasure as ever, and I'll, you're willing, I'll see you on the next one from our house to yours. We love you. Shalom. God bless.